Hello and happy Friday. Welcome to Up to Date from WVIA News. I'm Sarah Cinto, here to get you up to date with all the most interesting and important news you should know. Today, University of Scranton students share the stories of local veterans. And the big news of the world, the Catholic Church has a new pope, and he's the first one from the United States. It's Friday, May 9th. Let's get into it. We'll start off with that big international news. As of this morning, Pope Leo XIV has celebrated his first Mass, a day after his historic election as the first U.S.-born pope in the Church's 2,000-year history. The election of Cardinal Robert Prevost as the new pontiff overcame the traditional prohibition against a pope from the United States. On Friday, wearing white vestments, Leo processed into the Sistine Chapel and blessed the cardinals as he approached the altar. He was elected as the 267th pope on Thursday. Meanwhile, congratulations are pouring in from world leaders and statesmen as Leo begins his papacy. Pope Leo is a native of Chicago and graduated from Villanova University, the Augustinian Catholic University outside Philadelphia. Bishop of Scranton, Joseph Bambera, said the Diocese of Scranton is celebrating Pope Leo, quote, with great joy. In a statement, Bambera said the selection of the first North American pope demonstrates the vibrancy of the church in the U.S., saying, quote, "For generations, American Catholics have sought to embrace the gospel with compassion, and having a shepherd chosen from among us is both humbling and affirming." Look for more updates on Pope Leo at WVIA.org. Getting back to our local news now, communications students at the University of Scranton spent this semester interviewing local veterans, all to preserve their life stories. For this week's News Voices, WVIA's Kat Bolis sat down with Roger Dupuy to learn more about the project.
I'm Kat Bolis, and this is News Voices. Today I have with me Roger Dupuy. Hello, Roger.
Hi, Kat.
So Roger recently worked on a story about University of Scranton students who were documenting the lives of veterans at the Geno Murley Center. When I was very early in my career, I was sent to the Geno Murley Center to interview two World War II veterans. And it's one of those stories where I wish I could go back as like a more seasoned reporter. Can you tell me, you know, what why the students were there, what this class is, and, you know, why they do it, you know, every year?
Yeah, okay. So this is the COM224 Media Writing course at the University of Scranton, and it is run by Professor Kim Pavlik. And they what they do as part of this course each year to have the students meet with veterans who live there and talk with them about their life histories, and then they put together a written and also a digital summary of these folks' lives that they then present to them, and they will eventually be on display for the community to see. But it's sort of a writing exercise, but it's one of those things that goes so far beyond that, because it really is an opportunity for these folks, for the veterans, to tell their stories in a way they might not have otherwise. And, you know, as I was talking to Dr. Pavlik, one of the things she said was that, you know, sometimes we have heard stories and learned details of their service and their lives that they did not even tell their families, because sometimes it's just easier to tell your life to a stranger, as we know as journalists.
Have you had similar experiences, you know, interviewing veterans within your career?
Oh, gosh, yes. I had a World War II veteran who I interviewed 2 years ago when he turned 100, and he told me some things on video about escaping from a torpedoed ship off the coast of North Africa. That again, his family said to me, you know, we never knew these things, and he died a week later.
Wow.
Which was just for me so powerful that I was one of, you know, the last people to talk with him about that chapter in his life.
And what's interesting about kind of, you know, reporting and what these students are doing is that these stories are now on record for these families. I think you had mentioned in the story that there's kind of a physical component that also comes with, like, the storytelling and the documenting that they're doing.
So what they do is two students pair up with each veteran, and so each one of them writes their own story. And so what the veteran receives is a printed copy of that story, but then also on a thumb drive, I think it was, they have a digital version. And so that is them talking about their memories. And what Dr. Pavlik said to me was that, you know, we've had family members come back to us after their veteran relative had passed, and some of the things that were in those stories become part of the memorial for their relative.
In your article, you say the students interviewed Cold War veterans, World War II, Korea, Vietnam. You know, the one guy you talked to was involved in a crisis in Lebanon in 1958. Like, what do you think the young people get out of hearing about these experiences that kind of, I mean, we're talking college students, so they're,
right,
you know, 18, right, 19, 20, 21. What do you think they get out of hearing about these past experiences that seem like they're so far in the past?
The veteran who is the centerpiece of my story, John Hollenbeck, is 85. He was the person who served in 1958 in the Mediterranean during a crisis in Lebanon. And so the students who worked with him admitted they had never even heard of that particular incident, right, that chapter in our history. So not only did they learn that, but Mr. Hollenbeck talked a lot about his life after he came home, and his wife, Nancy, who was, you know, the love of his life, the center of his existence. And I think that was something that the students really were so impressed by, that, wow, this gentleman just really wanted to talk about his wife and his family life. And so it was really not just learning about his military service, but bonding with this gentleman, right? And what everyone involved said to me was that when this project happens every year, there are students who sign up who are not journalism students, right? They just want to take part in this. So, you know, you get the students who are really interested, they're really engaged. And what I'm also hearing is that for some of these veterans who may or may not have visitors, this is a highlight for their year.
Well, Roger, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Kat. It was great to be here.
More up to date after this break.
The work we do is only possible thanks to your support. I'm Lydia McFarlane, healthcare reporter for WVIA News. We're proud to bring you the best news and information out there. Go to wvia.org/news to see for yourself.
Welcome back. So, what are your plans for this weekend? How about taking a step back in time? WVIA's Haley O'Brien tells us how in this week's episode of Haley's Happy Hour.
I'm at the Pinchot Mansion, located at the Gray Towers National Historic Site in Milford. This weekend, a rare opportunity not only to tour the Pinchot Mansion, but to meet the family behind this historic home. So, Linda Pinto, you're on the board here, and you will be playing one of the characters. Start by telling me a little bit about the history of the Pinchot family.
The history of the Pinchot family is absolutely fascinating. They emigrated from France, fleeing Napoleon after he was defeated. They were big supporters of Napoleon, and they ended up in Milford, where a number of French emigres were coming to. He owned a mercantile, which is like a dry goods store, and he was at the crossroads of everything that was happening in this area at that time. So he became quite a wealthy man. This is Constantine Pinchot. He raised his family here. One of his sons was Cyril. He made a lot of money clear cutting, which was the sport of the day. And his son, James, became very sensitive to the effects of clear cutting, and was determined that he was going to try and redeem the family's reputation.
So tell me a little bit more about Gifford, James's son.
Well, Gifford started working in the Division of Forestry, met Teddy Roosevelt, and when Teddy became president, they established the Forest Service. And it was sort of the armed forces for trees. They applied the principles of scientific forestry, which was conservation rather than preservation. It was the wise use of forests and the wise development of forests. He was very rooted in giving back. The family's motto was noblesse oblige, which was basically to those who much is given, much is expected. And so he developed the Forest Service as we know it today.
So we have Wood and Chris Searles, two volunteers who will be playing the part of James and Mary Pinchot.
It's an honor to be asked to portray historic figures of such importance. So I'm very flattered that I was offered the opportunity to play James. He is the first in his family to move toward doing extensive good for all kinds. Not that his family wasn't doing things for other organizations, other people, but he really expanded it. He was part of the conservation movement, and his son was part of the conservation movement in part because of James' encouragement. And James was a tremendous supporter of the arts, music, architecture. He was just a wonderful person to support very important things in our country at a time when those priorities were kind of changing.
And Chris, tell me a little bit about this event taking place on Saturday.
Visitors will come in to the Great Hall, which is decorated and furnished as it would have been in the late 1880s, early 1890s. And James and Mary will tell visitors about their family history and also about the room that people are entering. From there, visitors will go to parts of the building that have been remodeled in various ways over time. And then visitors will also get a chance to go upstairs. And there, visitors would get to meet Teddy Roosevelt, and he will talk about his work with Gifford in the conservation area.
There's definitely lots to see here, and it's a beautiful property, so I encourage anyone to come up here and see it. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
All right, how are we feeling? All caught up and ready for the weekend? Find these stories and more at WVIA.org or on the WVIA mobile app. I'm Sarah Cinto. Thanks for listening this week. We'll be back on Monday, so that gives you 2 whole days to make sure you're subscribed on whatever your favorite podcast platform might be. And if you just can't get enough WVIA local news, get yourself on the list for the WVIA News Notes newsletter, too. You'll get all the local stories you want delivered every Tuesday and Friday morning. Have a great weekend, everyone. I'll see you Monday, right here on Up to Date.